Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. At the moment, it appears one of the fronts in that war is a familiar one. It is the battleground of France. Only this time, it seems, an internal struggle for the future of France, rather than an invasion from some external force. The folks who are bringing this fight to the fore wear yellow vests, a sort of uniform, I guess, that they've adopted as a result of their government having required all French drivers to have such a vest in their car so that they can be identified in case of emergency. To help us understand the mayhem that has begun to become a regular feature, it seems, on the streets of Paris and other cities of France, with the clashes between the yellow vests and the police and even military personnel, more of which is anticipated this weekend. By some reports, there are 89,000 military and police personnel who are being mobilized to contend with this, expected continuing clash. And I'm very pleased to say we have with us to discuss this and much more about what's going on in both France and Europe with one of our most valued contributors from across the pond. His name is Michel Gerfinkel. He is the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, a conservative think tank in France. He is also the Shulman Ginsburg Fellow at the Middle East Forum here in the United States. But he's also a distinguished author and journalist, notably the editor-at-large of Valeurs Actuelles, which is a conservative news weekly in France. He is a voluminous producer of important books on various strategic and geopolitical matters and has two more in the works, I'm pleased to say. So with all of that by way of background, let me welcome once again to our microphones at Secure Freedom Radio, the wonderful guest, Michel Gerfinkel. Good to have you. So glad you were able to take a full hour. Michel, thank you.
Good to be with you.
Well, let's begin with what on earth is going on with these yellow vests. Who are they, and what is prompting them to take to the streets increasingly violently, Michel?
Well, the movement started in a very casual way. A lot of people across the country were unhappy about a new rise in the price of gazole, as we say in French, which is diesel fuel. And the people hit by this rise were, in fact, should describe them as the working class and the lower middle classes all over France. To describe more accurately what is going on, the protest movement that originated about this rise turned very quickly into a mass protest movement. And when I say a mass protest movement, I should say also something which doesn't fit easily in any known categories. If we are, for instance, to try to understand politically where the yellow vest stand, we would say that they stand somewhere in between the Tea Party and the Bernie Sanders people, and it's much like an amalgamation of conservative people and radical people. A lot of people in France had the feeling that their economic situation is, in fact, getting worse and worse. They have also a feeling that politically wise, democracy doesn't work as it should work, and that their voice is not heard by the government and by the people in charge.
Pause, if you would, just a second, Michel Garfinkel, because I want to introduce another character in this plot, namely the president of France, Emmanuel Macron. He was swept into power not so long ago in what seemed to be this almost unanimous outpouring of support for this fresh new face who was going to be reinvigorating democracy, and they gave him, a majority in the parliament as well. So he no longer seems to be the darling of the people of France, I think it's safe to say. So who is this Emmanuel Macron, who was the darling of, it seemed, the electorate not so long ago, and now is the subject of this seemingly widespread and growing opposition?
Macron is 40 years old, which is extremely young for being a president in France, as in many other countries. He was elected when he was not yet 40. And what is very remarkable about him is that he's married to a woman who is 25 years older than he. He was very well educated. He entered the best universities in France, graduated at the best universities, especially the special elite schools that provide for most of the economic and political leaders in the country. He was briefly Minister of the Economy a few years before running for president. And when he ran for president he announced that he would run for president in 2016. He had no political party to support him, but a lot of people in the media or even members of other parties decided to support him.
So he's kind of the fresh new face, and everyone sort of threw in behind him. And I remember talking with you at the time, Michel, and you had some very serious misgivings about this untested man with an agenda that, if anything, seemed to be of the left. And I want, when we come back after the short break with you, Michel Garfinkel, to drill down on what has happened since this this wave of popular sentiment brought him to power with a supporting new party dominating the parliament, and how he has fallen so dramatically, the specific sort of agenda items that have infuriated so many in France and beyond the yellow vests apparently have made him a generally pretty unpopular politician. We'll be talking about all of that and much more, and what it means for us here in the United States that this is playing out so dramatically in the streets of Paris this weekend and beyond. We'll talk about that with Michel right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are joined, I'm pleased to say, for this full hour for an in-depth conversation about what is taking place in France at the moment and what it might portend, both for that country, most obviously, but perhaps for Europe more generally, and indeed for vital American interests, both on that side of the pond and perhaps here. Our guest is Michel Garfinkel, a distinguished author and journalist, a man who created his own think tank, the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, who has been active in the study and commentary about political affairs for decades and is always a very, very valued guest here at Secure Freedom Radio. Michel, again, welcome back. We were talking a bit about Macron's rise to power from essentially obscurity, his sudden embrace by the people of France on the basis of very little in the way of a record at a very tender age, I think it's fair to say. And we've heard a little bit from you about this economic initiative imposing significant costs on the diesel fuel that an awful lot of people in France use for their transportation. And it's affected particularly, as you say, the working and lower middle class who are now in the streets in yellow vests, it turns out, and engaging violently with the authorities. So tell us what has become of Macron's, generally high regard that has rendered him much less popular and now the object of these very aggressive protests.
I think that Macron is a victim of his own success. When he was elected in 2017, he was looking like really a superstar and a semi-god. He had made it without the backing of any organized party. He had been able to win a presidential election and then to get his supporters being elected at the parliamentary election and becoming the new absolute majority at the French National Assembly. But in fact, there is a lot of there is a large part of the illusion about that victory. If we go back to the first ballot of the presidential election in France 2 years ago, and there are two ballots in the French presidential election. On the first ballot, he garnered only 24% of the vote, which was good and put him ahead of any other candidate. But there were three candidates who were making almost as much as he did. So, in fact, potentially, there were something like 75% of the voters who, in fact, didn't vote for him in on the first ballot. And on the second ballot, as well as on during the parliamentary election that took place right after that, again, part of his victory was based on the fact that there were very, very high levels of abstention. So again, as compared to the people registered on the voting list, in fact, Macron did not make such impressive numbers. Nevertheless, he got elected. The French were happy to see a new face, and a lot of people were ready to give him a chance to achieve something. Now, his political agenda is a very bizarre agenda with both conservative and liberal elements. His favorite motto is en même temps, which in French means at the same time, which means that, for instance, he says that on the one hand, he is in favor of a restoration of French pride and of the authority of the president and so on. On the other hand, he says that France should be open to immigration, that there should be absolute parity between the genders in any public position. That was his global way. For a while, it worked quite well. And the reason why it worked quite well was that, in fact, the conservative element was predominant in his policies. For about 1 year, he, in fact, undertook a lot of reforms that the classic conservative right had not been courageous enough to start. And a lot of people did appreciate that. Let me just give you a very important example. He is the Minister of the Education, of the National Education, Mr. Blanquer, has in fact started a kind of complete counter-revolution in terms of education, an attempt to restore a traditional education and to stop a lot of very extreme liberal experiments. So there were a lot of good points about him. Then things started to deteriorate, and the moment it started to deteriorate was the Ben Ala affair. It's a very murky and a very opaque story. What we know is that on May 1st, there were demonstrations against his social reforms and some very violent incidents. In the wake of these incidents, it was revealed that one of the president's closest assistants, his name is Alexandre Ben Ala, a name which shows some Muslim North African descent. This guy, while not a member of the police forces, behaved like a policeman and undertook to beat some demonstrators. The question is not about whether the demonstrators were innocent or not. There was a lot of violence on this day. The question is, what in the world was an assistant to the president doing at that moment and at that place? And what was even more embarrassing was that very clearly the president did not want to pass any kind of judgment on Mr. Ben Ala, protected him. And when Ben Ala was grilled by a senatorial commission in France, the president, in fact, attacked the Senate, saying that the Senate had no right to submit one of his assistants to such a hearing and so on.
So let me just pause here, Michel Gervinkel, to make sure our audience is still with us. We've been talking about what's going on in France and a growing, it seems, revolt against the government of Emmanuel Macron. He has fallen from public favor, and you've just been describing some of the good things that he was doing, but now how this incident served to discredit certainly one of his assistants and in his conduct, I guess, his administration more generally. So bring us up, if you can, quickly to the present moment as to what the Yellow Vests are now so exercised about him.
What happened was that in the wake of the Ben Ala affair, the gravitas of the president, his authority as a president, disintegrated very quickly. And here we are in one of the basic reasons why revolutions happen. At one moment, people stop to be confident in the government and stop to have respect for the government. And this is what happened. And all of a sudden, the various groups, the various milieu in French society, we were not happy with Macron's reforms, and we had reasons, whatever reasons, to feel that they were not okay with the current situation. They started to be more aggressively against the president and against the government. At that point, the government decided to pass a rise of the diesel fuel in France. The accurate numbers is that the price of the liter went from what it used to be to more than 1.5 euros a liter, which would be something like 6 euros for for a gallon, or $7, or even more than $7. So even by French standards, that's a lot of money, and that kind of rise was hurting a lot of people across the country.
You might say it was pouring gasoline on the fire. It was something that further inflamed it. And so this brings us to the present pass. The government seems to this point, as best I can tell, Michel, to have been taking a pretty hard line against the protesters, that it has authorized the use of, you know, violent means to suppress them, at least with, you know, tear gas and batons and so on. And yet the Führer, you actually referred to it, I think, and you choose your words very carefully, I know, as revolution is continuing apace. We have to pause for just a moment, and when we come back, Michel, I want to just get your crystal ball out and see what you think is going to come of this. That and much more right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back for this third installment of our extended conversation with Michel Gerfinkel, one of the most astute observers of what is going on inside France at any given moment, but also what the implications might be for both his country and, Europe more generally and ours as well. He is the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute. He is also the editor-at-large of a conservative newsweekly, Valeurs Actuelles, and the author of numerous books of note, specifically dealing with political and geostrategic affairs. He has two more in the works, and we're anticipating them very much. Let me ask you, Michel, to just give us a sense of where you think this obviously volatile situation is likely to go from here. Will the Macron government find ways of mollifying the Yellow Jackets and stave off sort of more revolutionary activities? Or are we likely to see, as Marine Le Pen, the woman who is now being blamed by some for creating all of this unrest, will get her way in calling for new elections, which might change at least the direction of the Fifth Republic at the moment?
For about 1 month, Macron and his cabinet didn't want to give in. So they stubbornly refused to reconsider the rise in the price of diesel fuel. Things now have changed. After the violence on the during the last weekend, the prime minister said that the rise was suspended, and then said that the rise was finished, and he said that he was convening a lot of people, including representatives of the protesters, to come and discuss the whole issue of taxes and social reforms in France. Nevertheless, the point is that the president lost a lot of time. If he would have acted that way at the very beginning, it might have been enough to defuse the crisis entirely. Today, we have something different. There is now a fact that there is a strong popular movement, which almost out of nothing has arisen in France. And it's a fact that among those yellow jackets or yellow vests, whatever the translation in English, there are people who are radicals, who are extremists. Some of them are from the far right. And when I say the far right, they are from elements that are much to the right of Marine Le Pen. And there are also people from the far left. And both can be extremely violent, and both can entertain a vision of creating a really a revolutionary situation in France. The government has started to give in, as I said, but at the same time is warning that he will not countenance any more violence. And this is the reason why so many police forces and the army have been mobilized this weekend. If really there are violent people who want to turn any kind of demonstration into an urban war in Paris or in other cities, apparently the guidelines from the government now are to resist by force, whatever the result of such a confrontation. So this is the situation now. It's clear that the government doesn't show now that he is in control of the global situation. The government is going to be deserted by the police forces and maybe at a further point by even the army. And we will be in a situation reminiscent of the 1968 May Revolution in France, which eventually General de Gaulle was able to tame. But this time, there is no reason to believe that it can be tamed. So it's a very, very difficult and awkward situation for France. And I would say that I believe that most French citizens are a little bit split between their misgivings about Macron, essentially in the recent months, and a serious concern about the country descending into chaos. Mm-hmm.
This reference to General de Gaulle, of course, has highlighted one of the factors in play here, is it not? And that is, you had in him a very formidable leader, a man who, while he had a lot of detractors, of course, nonetheless had quite a following in France and was respected for his decisiveness. This is not the case with Emmanuel Macron today, for sure. Is that one of the reasons why you think this potential revolutionary situation is likely to continue to unfold?
Well, in 1968, you had a very serious revolutionary situation in Paris and maybe in a few big cities, essentially in Paris. But the rest of the country, the small cities, the countryside, which amounted to 80% of the country, in fact, was against it. It was against the unrest, the disorder, and chaos. And it supported de Gaulle. This is why when de Gaulle dissolved the National Assembly, he got a very, very large majority again, because the country was not at large. What we call the deep country was not in favor of the revolution at all. This time, the revolution comes from the deep country. It's the opposite of what we had 50 years ago. It's the opposite. So the question, essentially, the question for Macron and for France is very simple, very simple. It's whether a sizable part of the Yellow Jackets movement will reconsider their action, whether there will be a sizable number of Yellow Jackets saying, we got what we wanted, and now we are not going to get into a revolution and to turn France into a chaotic nation. We will stop here. Now there is a constitution in France, there are elections in France, we got what we want, and we stop here. The question is, how many of the Yellow Jackets will take this line of thinking, and how many will go further as revolutionaries?
What we have I think before us for sure is this sense that the popular sentiment may be so diffuse that in this particular movement, as I understand it, Michel, there is no real leadership structure, and it's unclear how decisions would be made. Is it just that some number of the people who have been wearing yellow vests or jackets in the streets of Paris and other cities won't turn out again? Is that how the decision might be taken, in effect, that you've just discussed?
You see, it's the Yellow Jackets movement is completely a social network movement. It started by a few people deciding to put on their yellow jacket to be visible, and then there were videos of these people that went viral on the internet and on the social networks, and this is how other people started to do the same. For the time being, there is no national leader for the movement. There are a few local leaders, but there is no national leader. And what is really important is that no political party at this present moment has a strong leader. Marine Le Pen was weakened by her defeat 2 years ago against Macron. The Socialist Party has totally disintegrated, and for the time being, there is no socialist leader people are going to listen to. The Conservative Party, which has sort of survived the crisis 2 years ago, still has not reorganized in a proper way. And his present leader, Mr. Wauquiez, who is a very nice person, is not charismatic enough. The hard left, which is extremely, which came out as very strong in the presidential election and had a very strong leader, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, is weakening again because Mélenchon is too much of a... is a good orator and so on, but beyond that, a lot of people are have started to realize that he is not a serious man nor a serious leader. So we are in a very peculiar situation where even if the president is very weak as compared as what he was 1 year ago.
I want to bring you in the next segment to put this into the larger context of what's happening elsewhere in Europe on the eve of European parliamentary elections. We'll discuss that and much more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are finishing up this hour-long conversation with Michel Gerfinkel, an astute observer and a very clear-eyed analyst of what is going on in his native France. He is the author of some incredibly thought-provoking and important books on Russia, on Roman era, Israel, and more. Most recently, Can Israel Survive? New Rules of the Game. But Michel, we're talking about Europe at the moment, and I just wanted to back the lens up. You've helped us understand a good bit about what's been going on in France, what is still unfolding, for that matter. And I just wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about how you see what's happening there in your own country, being in some way, shape, or form a reflection of or of a piece perhaps with the populist upheavals that have been reshaping political orders in other countries of Europe as well, and may ultimately have profound implications for the whole European project, as it's called, the European Union. Talk us through some of that, if you would, please.
Obviously, the what happens now to France is part of a broader picture, and it's a fact that all of Europe is in fact now in open revolt against the European Union as it has gradually been transformed into a kind of very opaque super state. You had the Brexit referendum in England, but you have what I would call a second Brexit in Eastern and Central Europe with the rise of new nationalist government in Hungary, in Poland and other countries. And then you had a third Brexit of sort in Italy, where one movement very similar to the Yellow Jackets in France, the Five Stars movement, emerged along with right-wing conservative party and now is in charge of the government. So clearly, there is a feeling all over the continent that the way politics were have been conducted for the recent years is not satisfactory enough, and that power should be in fact reverted to the citizens, to the people. In that sense, there is a global populist phenomenon in France. Now, in Europe. Now, regarding France, some people will say that even the Macron election 2 years ago had some populist undertones in the sense that he was opposing the established political class. But now we are facing something which is deeper, and again, what the question is whether it will subside or we will have more of it, and whether some kind of connection will be created between a French populist movement and other populist movements all over the continent.
We might see this playing out in the upcoming European parliamentary elections, as I understand it, Michel, that there will be in May, I believe it is, an opportunity for this popular sentiment to be expressed there. The question, I guess, is do you envision there being some kind of pan-Europe opposition to the European project, as they say, this super state, this idea that we're going to see, for example, a new European army, as Macron has proposed, that will be kind of a further mechanism for consolidating power at the supranational level? Or are these elections to Parliament unlikely to give rise to anything quite like that? What do you think?
The European elections are very important in France, because they are the only election which is entirely and fully resting on proportional representation. In other terms, in a political system where a lot of elections are decided by a kind of complex majority ballot, which is not exactly like the Anglo-Saxon first past the post ballot, but similar in some way. For the European elections in France, there is a full proportional representation, and those parties who have a lot of voters, a lot of supporters, but cannot get a lot of representatives elected because of the majority system, have a chance to win the proportional European election. And that was the case already at the last election when Marine Le Pen's National Front came out as the strongest party in France.
Michel, let me just interrupt because we're almost out of time. There was one other piece of this that I just want to make sure we at least touch on, because when we have you on, we usually visit about it exclusively. I know it's on your mind, and I have the feeling on the minds of a lot of people in these popular movements, including in France, and that is the effect of migration on the makeup of the electorates of these countries, or at least of their societies, and how that is affecting popular sentiment and the likelihood that this pan-European movement, if one does emerge, is going to be rooted at least in part to a common antipathy to the kinds of fundamental transformations that are being brought about by these mostly Muslim, many of them Sharia supremacist Muslims at that, migrant influxes.
I have always stressed the importance of immigration as a disruptive factor in European and French politics. But I must say that regarding the present crisis, the immigration issue has suddenly vanished. Nobody is talking about it. And I must say also that the very large areas where the migrant Muslim population is dominant have kept remarkably quiet throughout the present crisis. There is even a further question mark. It is whether, in the end of the day, the immigrant communities are not more supportive of Macron than of the Yellow Jacket movement. And this is a very interesting question indeed. I have no doubt that one major reason for the global unrest in Europe that we are witnessing has to do with uncontrolled immigration. And it's not just immigration. It is the consequences of immigration, which are a very quick and very drastic disruption of our way of life, of our essential civilization values.
Fascinating and troubling insight there, Michelle. It seems to me that we're going to have an awful lot of Sturm und Drang. And that brings me to one last quick question of you. For most of the post-war period, Germany has played a very important role in this European project. We're about to see a change in leadership. If not immediately, then certainly in terms of a successor to Angela Merkel be selected sometime, I believe, today as we're speaking, that has not yet been accomplished. Your thoughts on what is likely to be the nature of the new German government and how it will play in all of these dynamics?
Nobody really knows, but what we know is that the Germans are extremely, extremely cautious about political matters. Even when they get angry, they recall that anger is not always a good thing. And I believe that Germany is going to be, for at least a period of time, to stay as one of the most stable countries in Europe.
Thank you for your time today, my friend, and for the great work that you do as the editor-at-large of Valeur Actuelle. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. I hope the rest of you will do the same again on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.